Welcome to the life of Peter.
Bienvenidos a la vida de Pedro.
Today, this week, we're going to be talking this week. The goal of this week is to go through, we're going to now be going 1st Peter and 2nd Peter, and we're going to go through chapter 1 and chapter 2, ideally this week. We may not be able to finish all of chapter 1 and chapter 2, but it's okay. And I gave you the material. We have this material for people who are listening online. We have this material on the website. It's a class of Peter that Bill Grant taught here. And there's a lot of material. Sometimes we make a reference to some of the material there. So you can go and download that PowerPoint. Estamos en la vida de Pedro. Y ahora vamos a estar en el mes de marzo, en primera y segunda de Pedro. Esta semana espero que terminemos el primer capítulo y el segundo capítulo. Y hay un material que está ahí en el sitio de internet, que son unos slides que hizo Bill cuando hizo esta clase. Algunas veces vamos a hacer comentarios sobre estos slides para que cuando hablemos sobre primera y tercera y segunda de Pedro. Okay. So we spent the last 2 months talking about Peter. To understand him, seeing Peter in Mark, Peter in Acts, and then see the connections with 1 Peter and 2 Peter. So a lot of these verses that we're going to be going through, we already went through them. We already discussed them, we already meditate, analyze them. But now we're going to go a little bit faster and really see what it all says. Entonces, ya vimos en los primeros dos meses, en enero y febrero, vimos Pedro en Marcos, Pedro en Hechos, y vimos cómo se conecta lo que vivió Pedro con primera de Pedro y segunda de Pedro. Ya vimos muchos de los versículos que vamos a leer, ya los vimos, ya los analizamos, ya los meditamos, pero ahora vamos a hacer un poco más rápido ya para entender en completo de qué se trata la carta de primera de Pedro y segunda de Pedro. I'm going to start just with Elias' version, maybe, of the first chapter and a little bit of second chapter. Even though you have here, as I mentioned, you have a lot of beautiful slides that talk about these chapters. And they're great about who are the chosen. They're very good definitions. One that I would recommend for you guys to really spend time in it and digest when you go to that point 1-2a and 1-2b, to really, like 1-2b, it's like page 9, I think. 1-2b, it talks about grace. And understanding grace and reading all those verses will help you with 1 Peter and with 2 Peter, along with a lot of writings from Paul as well. But it's really pretty, and all this message that is here is really concise. It's really, really good job that was done here to explain about the chosen, the foreknew or foreknowledge, and then also the sanctifying and the sprinkling with blood. There's really good verses there in that one, point 1-2a and 1-2b. But right now I'm going to try to do my own little version of 1 minute. Entonces, ahorita voy a tratar de dar un resumen como de 1 o 2 minutos de lo que yo creo que trata el primer capítulo y el segundo capítulo, antes de que leamos y estudiemos. Pero sobre el material que les di, el punto 1.2a y el punto 1.2b, que está ahí en internet para que bajen ese PowerPoint, que creo que es como página 9, es muy buen material. Habla de la gracia, el punto 1.2b, y el entender la gracia y ver todos esos pasajes nos ayudan para primera de Pedro y segunda de Pedro, así como muchos también pasajes que escribe Pablo. Así también habla de la santificación y cómo la fuimos y por sangre, donde habla de eso en Éxodos también, 24. Y también habla del plan de Dios, habla de cómo fuimos escogidos, es el punto 1.2a. Okay. I was trying to put my summary, and here is, I believe, is Peter writing to Christians. When you see here, the first chapter is those ones that believe in him. They already believing in Jesus. So Peter writing to Christians in Asia Minor. And those are the ones who are now, they are now chosen also. They are now elect. They now receive the grace and peace that is being revealed in this last time.
Entonces aquí yo veo que es Pedro que está hablando a cristianos. Esos que creen, oyen, que creen en él. No es alguien que no cree en Jesús. Esos que creen en Jesús. Estos cristianos que están en Asia Menor. Y estos que ahora son escogidos, son elegidos por la gracia, y ahora ellos reciben la gracia y la paz que es revelada en estos tiempos.
And then, all of this, it is really according to God's plan to bring salvation to all nations. So whomever repents, if you see the key best passages that are there in this chapter, whoever repents, whoever is born again, baptized, and then whoever now is obedient, they are now holy. They are guarded and they are sprinkled with his blood. They are now saints. They have this living hope. They now have resurrection. They can have that hope of resurrection, that hope of heaven.
Entonces, ¿a quién les habla esto? Les habla estos que ahora, de acuerdo al plan de Dios, que trae esta salvación a todas las naciones, a cualquiera que se arrepienta. Y busquen ahí, vean los pasajes principales en el primer capítulo, a cualquiera que se arrepienta, a cualquiera que ahora es nacido de nuevo, que ahora es bautizado, y ahora es obediente al Señor. Estos que ahora pueden ser santos, van a ser guardados, y ellos son rociados por la sangre de Jesús, que ahora son santos. Tienen esta esperanza viva, esta esperanza de resurrección y de los cielos, un hogar en los cielos.
Who are these also? These are the ones that are suffering. You see the verses here, they are suffering, they have grieved by various trials, and they will be continuing to suffer.
¿Quiénes son estos? Estos son los que están sufriendo, que están, han sido agravados por diferentes pruebas y van a seguir todavía sufriendo.
And what is Peter talking to them? What is he telling them? He's telling them, flee away from sin. Flee away from sexual immorality. Flee away from those passions. You see that? Chapter 2 at the beginning, verse 1, from that malice, from that deceit, from that hypocrisy, from envy, from slander. Flee away from sin.
Entonces, ¿qué les dice? ¿Qué mensaje les dice? Aléjense del pecado. Aléjense de la inmoralidad sexual. Esas pasiones. La malicia. Ven el primer versículo del capítulo 2. En donde hay hipocresía, hay engaño, hay envidia. En donde estén lejos de todo ese pecado.
And then, what is he telling them? Love one another earnestly from a pure heart. Be like Jesus.
¿Y qué les dice ahora? Sean como Jesús. Ámense el uno al otro completamente con un corazón puro.
Why? Why? What is all this? So we may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light.
¿Para qué? Para que podamos proclamar las excelencias de él que os ha llamado afuera, que salgas de la oscuridad y que ahora entres en esa luz que es maravillosa.
So that's the Elias version of the first couple of chapters. I have some of these documented. Sometimes some people want things written. I can pass you my PowerPoint.
Eso es la versión de Elias. Si algunos quieren una copia de mi archivo de Word, se los puedo dar. Pero vamos a empezar a leer Primera de Pedro.
So we're going to start reading 1 Peter chapter 1. And I will need a volunteer. We're going to be reading long sections. Feel free if you want to read half of this section in Spanish, or if you want to read the whole thing, that's fine. Or if you want to read in English, that's okay as well. But we're going to be reading the first 9 verses of 1 Peter 1. Vamos a leer 1 Pedro 1, versículo del 1 al 9.
Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to God the elect, strangers in the world, scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, who have been chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, through the sanctifying work of the Spirit, for obedience to Jesus Christ and sprinkling by His blood. Grace and peace be yours in abundance. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In His great mercy, He has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that we can never perish, spoil, or fade, kept in heaven for you, who, through faith, are shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even through refined fire, may be proved genuine and may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Though you have not seen Him, you love Him. And even though you do not see Him now, you believe in Him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. For you are receiving the goal of your faith, the salvation of your souls.
Okay. I mentioned that in the month of March, I was going to be hearing from you. Mencioné que en el mes de marzo, iba a estar escuchando de ustedes. So, talk to me. What does this first 9 verses tell you? Entonces, díganme, ¿qué les dicen esos primeros 9 versículos? There's no right or wrong. Sometimes some people have different thoughts of some of these verses. No hay bien ni mal. Hay diferentes pensamientos algunas veces de estos versículos. So what jumps up? Or what can you tell?
Que tenemos Dios completamente en nuestra esquina. We have God completely in our corner. Él nos escogió. Él nos da herencia. Él nos proteja. Él hasta prueba nuestra fe para que sea dura, o sea, firme y consistente. So he's in our side. He's on our side because he's chosen us. He protects us. He even tests us to prove our faith so that it can be made more precious.
So Aaron took it here to a little bit to another level. First, this is written to them who are suffering, and they can know exactly what Aaron said, that God is with them in those times of trial. What comforting message that is. Aaron lo trajo a otro nivel, en donde está en primer lugar. Este mensaje es escrito a estos en ese primer siglo que estaban viviendo pruebas difíciles. Y es ánimo para ellos y es palabras bellas el saber que Dios está con ellos y que va a estar con ellos en esos momentos difíciles. Pero también, esto también es para nosotros, que es lo que me da mucho gusto lo que hizo ella en su comentario. Esto también es para nosotros, ya 2000 años después, en donde también este mensaje es fresco, nos ayuda y nos sirve para nuestra vida diaria. But just like she rightly said, this message is also for us 2,000 years later, and this is fresh, this is refreshing, this is encouraging, this is something that we need to hear, that it is good to know that God is in our side.
I did the table a couple weeks ago, and I actually used this section, and I compared it to Daniel chapter 9, when Daniel talks about coming before God, not because of their righteousness, but because of His mercy. And so here in verse 3, Peter talks about the great mercy that was given to us. And so back in Daniel's time, they did not have that relationship that you're referring to, right? They didn't have that closeness. But because of God's love, which is mentioned in verses 8 and 9, because of the mercy, we have a hope and that salvation. I don't know, so that word mercy kind of, even though it's only there once, kind of rings a bell in my mind. It's because of that mercy that we have. That we have everything.
Yeah.
That we have everything. We have that access to God, and we have Jesus Christ who died for us.
Okay, let me translate that. Yeah. Está diciendo como cuando le tocó dar la cena al Señor la semana pasada, cuando él hizo un comparativo de estos primeros versículos a Daniel 9, especialmente en el versículo 3, en donde en Daniel 9, en donde venir a Dios por su misericordia, y en el verso 3 ahí vemos cómo su gran misericordia dada para nosotros. Pero en ese tiempo de Daniel, ellos no tenían una relación como la que hoy tenemos nosotros con Dios. Pero podemos ver aquí en el verso 8 y 9, mencionando la palabra de misericordia, pero vemos ahí salvación y esperanza, y como, pero lo que está muy, 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 muy en su mente es esa misericordia, y cómo podemos nosotros ahora tener esa esperanza por medio de Jesús, y que esto es muy bello cuando lo comparamos nosotros con lo que hizo él con nosotros, el sacrificio, y por eso es la comparación con la cena del Señor.
What other jumps out to you from these 9 verses? ¿Qué más pueden decir de estos primeros 9 versículos?
That they're suffering persecution and are being tested within their faith. And Peter is assuring them that, let's see, how does he say it? This is the very goal of your salvation. Is that how he puts it? You're receiving the goal of your faith, the salvation of your souls. So right off the bat, he's reassuring them that even though they're being tested and persecuted for their faith, this is exactly what they can identify as the opportunity to prove that Christ, their God, really is in their corner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me translate that. En donde está diciendo cómo ellos que están sufriendo persecución, en donde ellos están siendo probados por su fe, en donde ahora Pedro dice, en donde el objetivo de su fe es esa salvación, y cómo ahora esto está reafirmado, donde vemos esto reafirmado por nuestra fe, por la fe, y esto es lo que ellos identificaban. Pero ahora esto también nos reafirma y nos muestra que Jesús estaba en el lado de ellos, está en el lado de nosotros.
What other comments do you have from the first 9 verses?
I have a question.
Sure.
I've always read and studied First Peter, had studies in First Peter, and loved this book, but it's occurred to me that I've forgotten exactly what persecutions they're going through.
In the first century?
In the churches particularly that he's talking to, people he's talking to, is there just a general persecution that they're supposed to renounce Christ? Is it political?
So, yeah, en donde pregunta, ¿qué tipo de persecución tenían ellos en esos momentos que está preguntando? So,
we see there was a lot of examples of persecution. Some of them were in Jerusalem, and some of the things that the apostles went through where they were about to die, some of them were with the Jews in Jerusalem. So we can see how Peter, he pretty much almost didn't make it. He almost lost his life. But that was some of the examples in Jerusalem.
Podemos ver algunos ejemplos en Jerusalén, por ejemplo, cuando la gente estaba arriesgando su vida, en donde Pedro casi muere, salvado, pero estos, algunos de estos casos son en Jerusalén.
We see other examples in these regions when we're looking at whenever the missionary journeys were taking place. We see other examples more with Paul, where Paul several times, he almost died. Like, really, they were dragging him and beating him.
So, and this is to Paul. So that was very real in some of his trips. And Asia was one of the areas that was also visited out of this area. Most of the other areas of this Asia Minor, although some of these other areas, Paul didn't went there, but you can also see the suffering that of the Christians in the second part of Acts or either in Paul's letters. And some of that suffering will be similar to the ones in this region because of Asia being something in common. So yes, so there was beatings and there was hatred, and they really wanted to cause damage to people who love God. So Paul, like several times, he risked his life. He almost died. The main problem that I always mention in these areas in Asia is when I try to think of Asia, I tell my kids, it's like, hey, okay, when we're thinking, especially think Ephesus or that part of Asia, which is really Greece, it's still Greece, think it's all those gods. So it's idolatry. So there was a lot of idolatry, a lot of sexual immorality. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these cities profited from that. And because when you have a business and you profit from that, and now you have Christians who are not only talking about the opposite of what how you live, but then also they are also affecting your business, and that's what ended up happening also in Ephesus, right? That was also, it was impacting their business as well. When we can see what was happening, it's a double one, a double reason, a double motive of why people will wanted to damage or hurt the Christians, because they were being hurt even in their businesses, because they are somebody who's preaching and teaching against what they are trying to do. They're trying to sell sexual immorality, they're trying to sell idolatry, and now you have people who are trying to change their ways. Entonces, podemos ver cuando yo pienso de estas áreas, el mejor ejemplo que veo es, por ejemplo, en Éfeso, que es un área en Asia, en que está incluida en esta carta, y también es esa área de Asia estaba, era realmente Grecia. Y tenía, que era lo principal cuando uno piensa de los griegos, piensa de inmoralidad sexual y piensa de idolatría, todos los dioses que había. Y cuando hay gente que ahora viene y predica en contra de lo que tú crees que la inmoralidad sexual es buena y que la idolatría es buena, pero también tú tienes negocios que ganan dinero por idolatría y inmoralidad sexual, entonces es doble ahora la razón, el motivo por la cual tú estás en contra de estas personas, porque están afectando tu bolsillo y están afectando también tus razones. So, we don't have, Peter doesn't write about the specifics of what exactly they were suffering, but it is, when we can see the whole picture of the New Testament, we see very real people risking their lives and persecution. Later, there's a stronger persecution from the Romans, but more like emperor-driven. But just because the emperor-driven persecution hasn't really started that heavy, that doesn't mean that the Roman, like, soldiers are soldiers. And in their areas where they are, they're going to do whatever they want to do because they have power. People who are evil and have authority and have power, they're going to do that. So I'm convinced that a lot of the persecutions, even though it was driven by emperors, some of that was already before. That hatred didn't just, okay, it was not like a switch that it started. I believe that all of that persecution, killing Christians and or hurting Christians, was even before that through the Roman Empire. Entonces, cuando vemos del Imperio Romano, a pesar de que normalmente sabemos que sí hubo una persecución y hubo cosas después que fueron guiadas o hechas por todo el imperio, el odio no empieza, no es un switch que alguien lo prende y ya empezó el odio. El odio estaba ya desde antes, y los soldados son soldados. Los soldados van a hacer persecución, van a matar gente, y van a hacer lo que ellos quieran, porque es gente malvada en algunos casos que tiene autoridad. Entonces, yo estoy convencido que sí había gente que estaba haciendo, matando a cristianos, estaba dañando a cristianos, en todas las regiones y porque había esa persecución. Desgraciadamente no tenemos escritos ejemplos específicos en Primera de Pedro y Segunda de Pedro. I don't know if that helped. No sé si eso sirve.
Yeah, it does, and I think too, just listening to you, I guess we have to remember when it's political, this is a Roman, these are Roman territories. I don't know how they, it's part of the Roman Empire. And so the political part, maybe Christ was still, because they were, these were his followers, he was still a threat to the Caesar.
Entonces Sardi menciona como si cuando vemos estos en la figura de Jesús y en algunos casos era visto como una como un daño en contra de lo viendo lo político, un daño en contra del César, como si hubiera gente que estaba tratando de hacer algo físico aquí en el mundo levantarse contra el reinado de los romanos. What other comments or questions you have in the first 9 verses? Normally what I do that is helpful for me, I don't color code my Bible, I just have a lot of pen and pencil in my Bible, but when I copy the passages in Word, I color code in Word, and then what I have done here is normally the things that are something that the person who this is written, those chosen, those Christians, or in this case us, that what we need to do, I highlight all of that in green, that is something that we need to do. And then the things that I see here, that what God is doing for us or giving us, I highlighted those in blue. Y normalmente lo que veo aquí, lo que yo hago es normalmente no pongo aquí imágenes aquí escrito de colores mi Biblia, nada más tengo uso pluma o lápiz, pero como copio la Biblia en un archivo de Word en la computadora, ahí en este archivo yo pongo en verde lo que es de nosotros, lo que en este caso estos cristianos tenían que hacer o que nosotros tenemos que hacer, y luego en azul pongo lo que Dios ha hecho por nosotros. So when I see here is the what's in their part, what did they need to do, you see right away verse 2, obedience jumps out, and it's in other verses as well. Verse 3, born again, I put that in green as well. And then we see verse 6, gripped by various trials. So that's something that we are going to go through and they were going to go through. So that's, we need to have patience and be gripped by those trials. And then verse 7, tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes through tested, it is tested by fires, also in green. And then verse 8, I put there that we believe in him. Donde yo puse en verde, por ejemplo, el verso 2, obediencia, en el verso 3, nacer de nuevo. Y luego podemos ver en el verso 6, cómo puse donde vamos a estar, ser afectados por varias pruebas. Y todo el verso 7 también, entonces somos esas pruebas que son ahora nuestra fe es probada. Y por fuego y en el verso 8 que creemos en él. And then those ones in blue where I put in here is we can see there verse 1 sanctification and the sprinkling with his blood. That is a beautiful thing, and I gave you passages that you can read that and understand that. Exodus 24:6-8 and also Hebrews 9 talks about all of that and really about how especially verse 18 of Hebrews 9 that is this new, just like the prior covenant. If you think about the Israelites, when they received that, we always think the Ten Commandments, right? And all of that starts, like you see what happens in Exodus chapter 19 and chapter 20, and then all the Constitution, 21, 22, and all the different laws and different things that they're given. Well, it culminates there with, you see that in chapter 24, and verse 6 and 8 in Exodus, where it's like, when now it's like all of this is ratified, what happens? There's a sprinkling with blood. That blood ends up sealing that agreement. It's like the signature that we put in an agreement. And that's what Hebrews 9 does. He talks about how he explains that about the old covenant and now with these new covenants, especially verse 18. And that's what Peter here just briefly mentions with that sprinkling with his blood. Entonces, podemos ver en Éxodo, es hermoso, en donde vemos capítulo 19, 20, 21. Todo eso normalmente recibe los 10 mandamientos, y luego todas las leyes, la constitución, pero lo hermoso es el capítulo 24, cuando en el verso 6 y 8 es como la firma de un convenio, en donde ahora hay sangre ahí que ratifica el convenio, donde está, están esparcidos por sangre, pero ahora Hebreos 9 nos explica especialmente el verso 18, donde este nuevo convenio también está ratificado por sangre. Y Pedro aquí mencionó esto, del rociamiento de sangre, que también tengo esto en azul, así como santificación, así como gracia y paz, del verso 2, así como la salvación que viene al verso 9, así como somos guardados nosotros del verso 5. So, other thing that I have here also highlighted in blue, definitely in verse 9, that salvation that we receive, grace and peace, verse 2, being guarded on verse 5, but definitely, yeah, the sprinkling of blood of verse 2, that is a beautiful thing. We're going to be reading, the next section is going to be 10 through 16. La siguiente sección va a ser del 10 al 16. ¿Qué otro comentario tienen de la primera sección? What other comments you have from the first section? Yeah.
When we studied this, Bill and I were really young, probably your ages. We just had three little ones, and we studied this on a night study during the week with George LeMasters. And he pointed out something I've never forgotten. When these people are being persecuted, in verse, let's see here, 3, 4. He says, let's see. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us a new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Christ from the dead and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. And the other translation is reserved in heaven for you. Instead of mine says kept, who through faith are shielded by God's power. And what George said is when you go to a really nice restaurant, you get a reservation, and you can imagine that there is a server standing there at your table in his black tux with a white towel over his arm. And your name is on that table. And no one's going to take that table. That's for you when you get there. And he said, that's what this is. It's God's promise that inheritance is reserved mm-hmm. for us personally, our names on it, mm-hmm. when we get to heaven. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such a beautiful word picture.
Yeah. Let me translate that. What was the verse that you read, the verses?
Well, it's 3 through... This is a really long verse.
Reserved in heaven.
Mm-hmm. 3 and 4, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, entonces está algo que un comentario va a traducir, en donde dice Marianne, cuando ella con Bill eran jóvenes, tenían un estudio en una noche con George, y algo de los comentarios que hubo ahí que fue muy bello, cuando estaban viendo esa sección del verso 3 y 4 de la misericordia y algo que es reservado en el cielo, que es algo muy bello, dice la mejor forma, que dice George, como dice, se pone a pensar cuando uno lleva a un restaurante, llega y está la persona ahí que te va a servir y se pone algo en su mano y te está esperando a ti y hay una silla ahí con tu nombre reservado. Y eso es lo que realmente le ayuda visualmente a ver, que es algo precioso de esa promesa de Dios, que eso está reservado, esto está reservado específicamente para ti y tiene tu nombre. Any other comment before we start reading on verse 10? Yeah?
Maybe just to add to that, I think there's so much anticipation built into these 9 verses where he says, may grace and peace be yours. In this you greatly rejoice. And again in 8, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory. And all of that joy is not for things that have been fulfilled, but for things that are coming. It's for that reservation that Marianne was talking about. And like just how excited we should be with that assurance, and how like the other things kind of fall to the wayside. They're going through horrible difficulties, mm-hmm. but they have this deep joy.
For a little while, he says, just for a short while, you're going to be going through this.
Por un poco, vas a estar en esas pruebas, por un poco. You did translate or not? Or translate it?
Nada más para añadir de lo que dijo Marianne, me brinca de los pasajes cuánta anticipación hay aquí, que la gracia y la paz, en versículo 6, en que os regocijáis, y de nuevo en el 8, os regocijáis grandemente con gozo inefable y lleno de gloria. Y toda esa anticipación, todo ese gozo es para cosas que todavía no se han cumplido. Entonces, la emoción que nos trae esa aseguranza de la herencia, de la reservación que tenemos.
Okay. Is there any other comment? Jake, do you have a comment or no? Okay. So if somebody can read the 10 through 16, please. Se me puede leer de 10 a 16.
Acerca de esta salvación, los profetas que profetizaron de la gracia que vendría a vosotros diligentemente inquirieron y indagaron, procurando saber qué persona o tiempo indicaba el Espíritu de Cristo dentro de ellos al predecir los sufrimientos de Cristo y las glorias que seguirían. A ellos les fue revelado que no se servían a sí mismos, sino a vosotros, en estas cosas que ahora os han sido anunciadas mediante los que os predicaron el Evangelio por el Espíritu Santo enviado del cielo, cosas a las cuales los ángeles anhelan mirar. Por tanto, ceñid vuestro entendimiento para la acción, sed sobrios en espíritu, poned vuestra esperanza completamente en la gracia que se os traerá en la revelación de Jesucristo. Como hijos obedientes, no os conforméis a los deseos que antes teníais en vuestra ignorancia, sino que así como aquel que os llamó es santo, así también sed vosotros santos en toda vuestra manera de vivir. Porque escrito está, sed santos, porque yo soy santo.
In this section, what I want to bring up about, if I will highlight something in blue, but I didn't do that, I put it bolded. It's just something that comes from God. The main thing that I see in this section is when he talks about the sufferings of Christ. Of course, he's talking about how it was predicted, but all of this is because of what the sacrifice that Christ did, and we can see that in verse 11. But then, things that are, he's giving us tasks here. He's saying, hey, verse 13, you need to be sober-minded. Verse 14 again, you need to be obedient. And then, of course, you shall be holy, for I am holy. And I put now in red, highlighted in red, sections towards like, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance. Don't be like a dog going back to your own vomit. Don't, like, flee against sin, flee against sexual immorality. Be holy. And one thing, when I go to Peter, and this may be me making it up, I don't know, but just like John, the main thing he writes, John, that he writes about love, I don't know, but to me, Peter, he writes about holiness, about being holy. Like, I just see holy everywhere whenever Peter writes, but he writes about a lot of other things, but holiness is a thing that jumps out to me. Algo que viene esta sección, donde habla el que algo que Dios nos da, vemos el sufrimiento de Cristo, ese regalo hermoso que vemos en el verso 11, y cómo de algo que nos da a nosotros, que nos pide, que tenemos que tener una mente sólida, sobria, que vemos ahí en el verso 13, verso 14, tenemos que ser obedientes, pero principal el verso 15, tenemos que ser santos, así como Dios es santo. Y algo que yo puse en rojo en mi computadora, ahí en el verso 14, que no debemos ser conformados a las pasiones de nuestra ignorancia, en donde no debemos ser como ese perro que regresa al vómito en el pecado. Tenemos que dejar fuera el pecado, dejar la inmoralidad sexual y tenemos que ser santos. Y así como Juan tiene una palabra que siempre habla mucho, que habla del amor, tal vez este soy yo nada más, pero cuando yo veo a Pedro utiliza mucho la palabra de santo, de ser santo, así como Dios es santo. So we're going to continue in the next class, but is there a comment that you have you don't want to forget? ¿Hay algún comentario antes de terminar, tal vez que no quieran que se les olvide? It's okay.
I really love this passage for the longing that the prophets had to know what God's will was, how like they're seeking those predictions, and even though they knew that it wasn't going to be for themselves, they were just searching into it, and even angels longed to look for it. So I think that connects really well with verse 13, where it says, prepare your minds for action.
5 minutes remain.
Right? Be sober in spirit and fix your hope, because all these former generations wanted that and couldn't have it.
Could you say that, anybody?
Me encanta esta sección por el amor o el deseo de conocer la voluntad de Dios y las promesas como se iban a cumplir, que están procurando saber, tratando de entender lo que está predecido, buscando las revelaciones, entendimiento, y hasta los ángeles anhelaban mirar esos secretos, y son para nosotros. Entonces el versículo 13, cuando dice, por tanto ceñid vuestro entendimiento, es porque tenemos nosotros ese don de poder entender y saber la voluntad de Dios.
And I always say, you can compare Ephesians a lot to First Peter, like there's a lot of comparisons that come in your brain, and also Paul, he writes about his version of that. Y siempre digo, puede uno comparar a Efesios con Primera de Pedro, y ese punto Pablo escribe también sobre esos en Efesios. Muchas gracias.